The following is inspired by actual events and is meant for a mature audience. Your hosts are lifelong horror fans.
Listener discretion is advised.
What you are about to see.
It's called the Monster Club.
Welcome to the Monster Club, an honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans. Fair warning, you may not have seen this movie. We have spoilers ho! I am Jethel.
And I'm Tuck. And this week we're discussing 1985's Life Force, a science fiction horror movie. Before that, let's talk about what we've been up to this past couple of weeks. You've been off the grid. Pretty much.
Unfortunately, we had a little technical issue.
Repeated technical issues.
Repeated technical issues. We recorded a podcast for Silence of the Hams.
We talked about Silence of the Hams. The recording did not take place.
yeah. We had a little technical snafu there. It's like, I'm bringing it into my mixer. It's like, why is this only 2 minutes long?
Oh, my God. That must be really compressed.
So there was that issue, and then I was without, no, I was sick.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I'm glad you sound a little bit better, I think.
Yeah, I'm feeling better today.
That's good.
And then I was without home internet for over a week. So, we've had a few technical issues, but we're back.
Yes, it's good to have you back on the internet, where you belong.
It's good to have internet.
It's just not the same internet without you.
I was curled up a little ball, shaking.
Man. The regular updates, I mean, it was like you were trapped in a bunker underground. It's been 4 days without internet. We're starting to go a little crazy down here. We're down to our last box of saltines. Send help.
Someone send Wi-Fi. We'll pay by the minute.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that's... I've had plenty of movies to watch, though. I mean, that's one of the reasons I have such a large video collection is, I started collecting when I didn't have internet.
Right.
Internet or
no
cable.
Netflix for you. Yeah. Oh, right. Geez, I can't imagine. So yeah. I noticed when you popped back online, you posted a flurry of reviews and links.
Yes. And if you would like to see what I've been up to, you can go to cinemaunrest.com. Mm-hmm. I watched a few movies that I had already reviewed, so I didn't post those, too. So.
And Cinema Unrest is also on Facebook, isn't that right?
Yes.
People can like the Facebook page and see each review as it comes up.
Exactly.
Good times.
Because I am up to date. I'm a modern man in a modern world.
Coming this Christmas to a theater near you, Facebook.
So it pretty much is a horror show sometimes, I'll tell you.
Sometimes. All right, so.
I have been reading every single Harry Potter book for the first time.
You know,
every
funny,
single last one.
I didn't picture you as a 14-year-old girl.
What? This isn't Twilight, okay? This is Harry Potter. This is serious business here, buddy.
Okay, I'm only kidding. I'm kidding. I've not read the books, but I did enjoy the movies very much. So
yeah, me too. And our mutual friend Emily Taylor has gotten me into reading books a lot lately. She's been a good influence on me, and I decided that if I was going to plow back into the whole book reading thing again, I got myself a nice Kindle and everything, and I got all all seven Harry Potter novels and decided to go through them back to back because that's something that I think somebody should do. Before they get too old or blind before life unexpectedly ends. Right. That would be a horrible, tragedy not to take those in. And they are wonderful books.
Spoiler alert, Harry's the boy who lives.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's known as that from the beginning, but they really are wonderful. If you enjoy the movies, I highly recommend getting the ebooks or there are two different audiobook versions out an American version, and then, you know, read by somebody with a British accent. And then there's one that I listened to, which was the UK version that I obtained by nefarious means. Read by Steve. Well, I wouldn't have to if they just stop with the whole, we can't do it because of selling rights and everything.
Oh, God, I'm just imagining Harry Potter, the audiobook, as read by Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Close. It's read by Stephen Fry.
Harry Potter, I'll get you!
Actually, have you ever watched the British quiz show QI on YouTube?
No, I haven't.
It's great fun. Just look up QI and spend a couple hours laughing your ass off if you like British humor at all. But Stephen Fry is one of my favorite actors, and he does the voices pretty much, you know, identical to the actor's portrayal of these characters in the movie. So it was very easy for me to fall into it. There are little odd moments of cognitive dissonance where the two versions split off, you know, where they use a different word or a different phrase that they right. thought American audiences wouldn't get. And also because the audiobooks are from older versions, and she's updated the ebook versions significantly to correct little errors and, you know, little things that she just found wrong. I'm going to wait a couple of months and plow through that again, because I feel like that's one of the most rewarding reading experiences I've ever had. I read through the largest and last novel in 3 days. I haven't plowed through a book like that since I was a teenager. That was fun. That's what I have been up to. Okay.
All right. Now let's flip it around a little bit. On upcoming events, are you going to see Star Wars The Force Awakens?
Nah, I think I just give it a miss. Fuck that noise.
What?
Still mad over Jar Jar. Now, of course I'm going to see it.
Blasphemy!
Now, I didn't purchase tickets to see it opening night. I'm not that
crazy. Oh, no, I'm not that stupid.
Okay, I'm not going to pre-order tickets unless it seems like that's the only way to get a ticket, you know?
Now, I have the week of Christmas off of work, so I went ahead and pre-ordered a ticket for the 21st.
Ah, that's a good idea.
For me and Elquin to go see it in IMAX.
Well, I got a friend coming up to where I live. She comes and visits from now from time to time, and she's my only way to get to the theater, pretty much, so... I don't know. I'm just going to have to wait and see, you know,
mm-hmm.
be available. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I also want to see the Peanuts movie. I really want to see that.
I'm torn with that one.
The kid in me really wants to see it. I love the style that they've gone with. It's new while still being faithful to the cartoon.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see.
If the humor is the same, the characters sound, you know, genuine like they always have, like we talked about before, using real kids in the roles, then I'm all for it. I can't wait to see it. So this week we're going to be talking about Life Force, a 1985 movie about vampires from space. That's actually the name of the novel it comes from, right? Space Vampires?
Yes.
And there could not be a cheesier title for a book. How did anybody see this book and think, wow, this would be a great serious movie?
Yeah, that Space Vampires, that doesn't sound like a very serious title to me. But I like the movie.
Yes.
Although the author of the book did not.
Yeah, I remember reading a couple of things about that.
He probably would have a different title for the movie. Speaking of different titles.
Yeah, why don't you give me yours?
Okay, I came up with My Ex-Wife, the movie. She lures you in with her boobs and sucks the life out of you.
Oh, boy. Well, I came up with 5 different titles. Are you ready, Ethel? Are you ready to be rocked?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Bring it on!
I have to set this first one up. Do you know what the Kuiper Belt is?
I do.
Okay. So my first alternate title is Kuiper Belt Cantaloupes. Yeah, it's got a nice alliteration style to it. It rolls off the tongue, and the joke is obvious. we'll get into that later. Okay, you ready for another one?
Yes.
Okay, this one's even worse. Hypno boobies from beyond the stars. Okay, number three.
I got my own theremin going on.
Number three, man's powerlessness before woman, a parable. Well, I mean, it actually is about that, really, if you dig into the subtext of the movie. The longest title I came up with was The Sexual Awakening of Nearly Every Boy Growing Up in the 1980s.
Okay.
Well, the ones who parents paid for premium cable channels and were especially heavy sleepers anyway. I was one of them.
Hey, what's going on down here in the living room? Oh my God!
Nothing! I'm just... Click! I'm watching Mr. Rogers? Whatever was on at 4 a.m.
Don't you mean Mrs. Rogers?
Yeah, well, I mean, if I click the channel quickly enough. So, the character that we're all most interested in, of course, she was only on screen for 7 minutes during the film.
Space Girl!
So my last title is 7 Minutes of Heaven.
Ooh. I just find it funny that the actual character name is Space Girl.
Well, they had to call her something. I think she's just the unnamed, you know, leader,
the
queen of the vamp. I would have called her the queen of the vampires, you know.
Yeah, that would have been better, I think.
You know, but of course they didn't call her anything in the movie. In the story, she's not known as anything other than...
Yeah, they don't call her anything.
The one that's clearly in charge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she... Wow, what a character. Exceptionally fit and beautiful, the young 19-year-old Mathilda May, who played her.
Her first major movie role.
Yeah.
And spends 90% of it completely naked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All 7 minutes. She'd been in a couple of films before this, but this one was the one that she's most known for. What I liked about her being in this movie the most was that the nudity wasn't just there for nudity's sake. And they didn't just say, oh, she's the most pretty woman, so let's use her. You know, it wasn't a cheap booby shot. They chose her not just because she was spectacularly fit and beautiful, but she had excellent poise from years.
Well, she was also a dancer, wasn't she?
Yeah, she had formal ballet training for years before this, growing up. So she had a way of moving that was very deliberate and graceful that played into, you know, the otherworldliness of her character. And she had these great facial expressions when attempting to subdue victims with her spiral contacts eyes. Did you notice on the Blu-ray that she had spiral contact in? I'd never noticed that before.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And she had this great Bela Lugosi kind of, you know, pulsating to her eyes, where she would open up her eyes a little bit and show the whites of her eyes as she was hypnotizing her prey. And I thought that was great, a great subtle touch, you know, to what could have very easily been an extremely cheesy role in a cheeseball film.
Yeah, this could have very easily just turned into, you may as well just called it, hey, look at her tits.
Yeah, I know. It's boobies from space, pretty much. I know that's what we saw when we were 12 or 13 watching this movie, but looking at it now, it's got stuff in it that I also recognized at the time, but wouldn't have been able to describe as a 12 or 13-year-old boy being distracted by boobies. You know, I mean, it's got that incredibly, you know, serious and adventurous score by Henry Mancini. And I think that lends a lot of credibility to this film. It could have easily been complete camp. Thank God they changed that title.
Yeah.
I can't believe they were almost going to go with Space Vampires. I mean, that was the title
That would have driven a nail in the coffin for this production.
Right up until they put it in the can, pretty much. And they said, you know what? Maybe we should come up with something a little bit more marketable.
An interesting take on vampires. This is not your typical blood vampire.
No, absolutely not.
This is more of a life force sucking demoness from hell. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I was describing my ex-wife again.
The powers of these creatures. I mean, the ability to just siphon life energy from other life forms. And
it's
the,
like, she's going to kill me, but I can't escape her charms.
I know. You know, did you listen at all to the director's commentary?
No, I did. I did watch the interview with Mathilde May, but I didn't listen to the director's commentary.
I listened and watched to everything on the Blu-ray except for all of the special effects commentary. That was just a little bit too dry for me. I fast-forwarded to little bits that I was interested in.
I thought it was good use of a 500-watt light bulb.
Very.
Yeah, you know, for the scene where the streak of life force or whatever is going down the street, they actually had a really bright light bulb on a pulley system.
Yeah, that was the practical element of the effect. But they
Great because a lot of times nowadays they would just do it with CGI. They wouldn't even bother with the lighting.
Well, exactly. And the lighting had the advantage of throwing actual real time practical shadows across the scene as it you know flew over the scene, which is great because you can't do that effectively with CGI, really. I mean, that would take a lot of freaking work. You might do it as a reference, but then you would go back and have to, you know, do all this twiddly stuff. So I'm glad this movie came out in the 1980s before CGI could hit it. Also because of the
shriveled dead.
Thank you. The shriveled dead. Those puppets, are definitely one of the things that I remember Life Force about, the most. Aside from Mathilde May, of course. They were freaky. They freaked me out more than anything I have ever seen. Anything I had seen up to seeing The Thing, you know, because I saw that later, I believe.
Yeah.
But up until then, these things were the freakiest thing I'd ever seen. I loved the way they moved. I loved the way that their flesh kind of shrunk to their frame and had that expanding, shrinking, you know, mechanism where they sucked the air out of the puppet to shrink the flesh to the bones. And I loved the way the eyes moved. I loved the way the eyes were like bigger than they should be. You know?
Just give them more of a sunken effect.
Yeah. And,
The puppeteering was very good.
And, what was the other thing? Oh, the sounds. The sounds that those creatures made. You know, the vocalizations. Those things gave me nightmares. they were fantastic. Fantastically scary. They were the best animatronic kind of, you know, puppeteering thing I'd ever seen. And I think very few things come as close to freaking me out as those things do.
So, Life Force, psychic vampire sucking the life force from the people of London.
Let's talk about Space Girl's powers. We were talking about the character. She has the ability to siphon life energy from other life forms. Seemingly immortal, being at the very top of the life force pyramid scheme that seems to be going on, is completely unaffected by gravity once on a planet's surface. Where can we go with this?
I know exactly where we can go with this.
Okay.
Jean-Luc Picard.
Oh, boy. Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart.
What a surprising little role that pops
Patrick
up.
Patrick Stewart, you know, has more camera time than Mathilde May in this movie.
He does. Well, some of it's him as a dummy. But yeah. Yeah, he pops up unexpectedly. You know, he was disappointed with the American cut of the film. In the British cut of the film, which we saw, the European cut. Steve Railsback, playing Tom Carlson, actually kisses Patrick Stewart, who is possessed by the, you know,
Space Girl.
By the Space Girl. And alternately swaps, you know, with him on the examining room table to emphasize this. So he was disappointed that was cut out of the American cut. But it exists on Blu-ray, so definitely see that. That's definitely one of, it has to be a movie first.
And I love the line, they're talking about the child killer that they're going to go interview.
He's been naughty.
He, you know, Patrick Stewart actually suggested that line. The original line was, he's
bad
been
boy
bad. He's been bad. He's been bad. Oh, it kind of fell
naughty.
Flat. So glad. Because, I mean, there's only, he said the line on the only way, you know, only, as only Patrick Stewart could say the line.
It's as if he was on the bridge going, make it
naughty.
Yeah, he just had this, you know, and the first time I watched this movie, when I was a kid, that part really surprised me. I liked that they were kind of, you know, they misled the audience there about what happens at that moment. Because I was, it was an excellent bit of cinematic misdirection where you were focused on this man asleep on the bed in this insane asylum. And it turns out not to be.
No, it was Patrick Stewart all along! No!
Yeah, that was a fantastic, and I didn't quite get what they were talking about, but apparently that circular room that they're in, that little round room where they take Patrick Stewart up and they strap him down on the examination, apparently that whole room, rotates around.
Really?
Yeah, the whole room spins, and did this to achieve the look that they had, but I didn't really, I watched it back a couple of times and I really couldn't tell, you know, that they had done anything special.
I'm trying to remember anything about that scene.
I mean, I remember some chairs and stuff flying around in a circle overhead, but that could have just been done with chairs on wires. Why did the whole room have to spin
around? That seems overkill.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could have been really interesting, having people flattened up against the walls and, but you, again, you know, that's, an actor can do that, so it would have to be to have stuff thrown against the walls, but you couldn't split the room fast enough. I mean, it would have to be carnival ride speed, so I didn't see it myself. But it's still an interesting scene, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe they just tried a really elaborate effect and it just didn't work out as nearly as well. And shortly after that, we have the blood scene.
Yes. The blood from Patrick Stewart and that other guy.
Yeah.
Congealing into Space Girl.
Bloody Space Girl.
Bloody Space Girl. And she did not like that scene at all because she was covered in goo.
Yes.
Not only completely naked, but covered in goo.
Well, so not completely naked. She was covered in goo.
Covered in goo.
But she was definitely pretty cold, I think. That was gross. I never find that scene convincing at all, but it was an interesting effect.
Yeah.
And
her hair during that scene, it wasn't just matted down with goo. They tried to make like a goo wig.
Yeah.
It looked like it was flowing hair, but made out of blood.
Yeah.
Like, that's just weird.
Yeah, it did look weird, but I liked that it looked weird, that it wasn't just, you know, hair with stuff on. You know, there was something else to it, and I found that interesting, and I liked the way it switches to like a mannequin that they just drop, you know, and then it, you know, she collapses into a puddle on the floor of the helicopter.
Right.
I like that whole scene.
And you get through the whole movie, and you realize at the end, if you think about it, she won.
Yeah, you know.
they may have driven her from the Earth, but she survives.
I wonder if they were hoping that it would do well enough to do a sequel. Because that really is set up for a sequel, isn't it? I mean, it really could be Life Force Part 1.
Life Force 2, back in Manhattan.
This time
it's personal.
Oh, jeez, no.
In shocking 3D. Mathilda May in 3D.
I bet you that would probably be the biggest reason why they couldn't go through with it, because, I mean, how do you convince an actress to do that again? And, you know, they had to audition like 1,000 women before they found Mathilda May. It was really hard to get through watching the director's commentary on this Blu-ray because the director was very interesting to listen to. They had some, you know, just goofball guy. It had nothing to do with the movie. He was just part of the production team for the Blu-ray, I guess. And he sounded like some young, you know, early 20s, you know, film nut. Not film nut. He was definitely a fan, but you just wanted him to shut up.
Was he one of these guys?
Cut. I mean,
was he one of these guys putting together an interview that thought that this was just the be all end all greatest movie ever made type of guy?
Yeah, and he just kept going on and on and on, and he kept saying things and then disagreeing with the director.
Oh my god!
About things, and I was just like, shut up, you dweeb!
So he was like an obsessive Star Trek fan at a Star Trek convention, arguing with Captain Kirk.
Exactly. Not arguing, but definitely contradicting, you know? Like at one point, one of my favorite moments to hate from the director's commentary is when, he makes some really stupid comment about, how the female space girl, the female vampire definitely had a leg up over the male vampires because the male vampires just kind of went around kicking ass and they couldn't really seduce any of the male characters like the female vampire could, and he said something about now if there had been any gay humans amongst the characters, this would have been a completely different movie, huh? And he tried to make some stupid joke and the director was like,
seriously, what?
You know, and he goes, well, you know, they couldn't, you know, but at that moment, the, one of the first, shriveled dead, woke up on the table as they were about to do the autopsy.
Yeah.
And extends his arms to the surgeon beckoning him.
Yes.
And the surgeon steps forward entranced, and the director's like, well, I don't know, this guy's doing pretty good right here. So that, I was like, yes, put that dweeb in his place. That was a great moment. You got to go back and watch that if you still got it.
So do you think the director actually got to the point where he's like, you know what, this is over?
There are a couple of moments where the director's just like, what?
Who is this dweeb?
I know, it is so irritating to listen to.
Pardon me, director. During scene 32 at minute mark 5.
Nothing quite that bad, but definitely in that vein, yes. And it is cringeworthy to listen to, and it also makes me worried a little bit that we sound a little bit like that while we're talking about the movies that we love. But I definitely wouldn't go into a fan gush talking with the director or a famous actor from a movie that I and that was something that this commenter, this guy, I mean, he was a little bit skeevy when it came to, scenes with Mathilda May, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, she was too good for him. You know, it's like, don't treat Mathilda May like that. You know, despite the fact that I had spent years of my early adulthood, obsessively lusting over this actress. So yeah, director's commentary, if you can stand the skeeviness and the kneebishness of this other guy, I just wanted to slap him. Just like, shut up every time. And he kept interrupting the director. The director would be off on some interesting story that I wanted to hear. And then the guy would be, oh, look at this scene, blah, 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 blah. I was just like,
shut up!
Yes!
I'll kill you!
So, you mentioned the end of the movie. The vampires win. They apparently succeed in driving them off the surface of the earth, you know, because
but they're still alive and they're aboard their ship. Their ship is powered up.
And takes off and F's off back to Halley's Comet. In the book, it's not Halley's Comet. It's just I think the ship is just floating out there in the asteroid belt. I think that's the story.
No, it was in the corona of the comet.
No, in the film, yes, but yes. In the book, no. Oh, Halley's Comet was something that they thought of for the film because they're like, hey, Halley's Comet's coming to visit in 86.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, that's perfect. You know, that lines up perfectly. I think it's 86. I could be wrong about that.
Yes, it is.
So they were like, okay, perfect. Let's just have it take place, you know, when it's on approach, you know, and then that'll be something they could tie into reality for the movie. But in the book, it's just, you know, off in the asteroid belt, and they just discover it while, you know, looking for minerals to mine out in the asteroid belt, a mineral exploration mission. But I like the idea of the comet because it brings about this periodic and they'll be back, you know?
Right.
And I really wanted to see, you know, the movie, you know, it makes me want to see, you know, 2052 or whenever it'll be when it comes, swings back around, you know, I want to see the sequel where the vampires come back, you know, and there's a new queen in place, obviously. It couldn't be.
Well, by then, I'm pretty sure they would have weeded out any actual actors and gone full CGI.
Maybe. But, I mean, were you satisfied with CGI Arnold Schwarzenegger in the latest Terminator movie?
I haven't seen it.
Really? It is pretty neat to see, but it's not anywhere approaching, like, oh, that's a believable actor.
Right.
You know, not unless every character is CGI, like...
And then you have Final Fantasy.
Well, there's that, and there's one other movie that actually comes really close. What am I thinking of? It's the one about Grindel.
Beowulf.
That movie, every single character is CGI. Every single set, everything is CGI. And it comes closer to crossing the uncanny valley than any movie I've ever seen. Final Fantasy doesn't even come close. I can easily tell that those are CGI characters, but Beowulf, it fooled me.
I want to talk a little bit more about Mathilde May's performance. I mean, you got a whole movie here. You have a whole slew of characters. Some of them are, you know, well-known British actors, mm-hmm. but the only thing anyone can ever talk about is the performance of Mathilde May.
Well, it was pretty extraordinary, given the fact that she didn't speak a lick of English.
That's right. She had to learn her lines phonetically.
Mm-hmm.
So someone had to tell her what to say. And there were actually a couple of German actors there that were told, mm-hmm. you can't have a German accent for this movie. And they said, why? And they said, because Mathilde May is actually learning her lines phonetically. So, no.
She was basing her English off of one of the actors that she spent a lot of time talking mm-hmm. to on set. So they were like, okay, well, Dr. Hans Falada, the kind of the Van Helsing of this movie, which I really liked. I loved those nods to the classic vampire myth, you know, with Mathilde May's hypnotic eyes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the stake through the heart, you know. But in this case, it was leaded iron instead of wood. And it had to be thrust not through the heart, but through the sternum, I think, to where the center of the life force.
It was just below the just below the heart.
Yeah, so I found those interesting. What did you think about you know, at some point the two male vampires get obliterated by a couple of grenades, but then they just kind of vaporize and infect the two male guards, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at the blood scene in the helicopter where she congeals back into herself. I don't think you can kill them that way.
So, yeah, just obliterating the bodies, and they just vaporize and swim into whoever they want to through the air. That's incredibly frightening. But I wish they had made that a little bit more plain, that that's what had happened, and then just made the actors unaware. That was disconcerting to me. Just kind of like, what happened there? Because one of the guards doesn't show up until much later. And then you realize by the smirk on his face that he's one of the...
And like... One of the male vampires had, like, one line.
Yeah, and they cut it out of the American version.
And I think they should have
put it back in. No, I like it. I like it. It kind of gives me a chill. I love the processing they did on his voice.
Come to me and just come to me.
He say it'll probably a little less terrifying. It will be less terrifying if you just come to me. And I love the processing they put on his voice.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
I love the movement of his body as he's helping to siphon all this life force energy to the queen, to the, you know, to the one at the top of the life force pyramid scheme. That's what
and
I
then,
call it.
And then she beams the energy to the avocado.
To the space avocado. That's right. To the great collector. And did you notice the little babies in the crystals?
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like a nod to, and they start again. They've renewed the previously, they're starting to reproduce automatically via the ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess it just produces new vampires automatically. I found that interesting.
She lays eggs like a sturgeon.
So, you know, I wonder if maybe there were just eggs there in those crystals and the life force activated and they've started to grow.
Maybe.
I love that. I wonder if in the story, the original novel, I wonder if, you know, there are other worlds that they visit other than Earth. You know, I mean, is it just humans? You know, it seems like an awful lot of population to only come around every 76 years, you know, after having almost died off.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think the story would be a little bit more interesting is if there were a legend about how they were defeated the last time and they could have uncovered that, oh my God, these things have been here before. And here is how the humans of the time found a way to defeat them. And, you know, I wish they'd done a little bit of Indiana Jonesing around and found some record of these creatures from before. But instead, the Hans Falada character just kind of digs through a couple of books and says, hey, send me this thing from the museum and we're going to go stab him.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been a little bit more interesting.
All right. So what else can we say about Life Force?
I'm glad to have it on Blu-ray. I love the movie. I love the score. I love the seriousness of it. I love that all the effects stand up completely, except for the Patrick Stewart and Percy characters with the blood coming out.
Yeah,
of,
that does seem a little dated.
That's the only one that leaves me feeling, well, that's a little, okay, nice
yeah,
try.
That looks a little weird.
A little weird. I mean, I can see what they were trying to do, but the dummies don't look right. Yeah. They don't look lifelike at all. They should have, you know.
If they were to redo it today, I'm sure they can make really lifelike mannequins of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just a little off.
And the mannequins they did make were very lifelike.
Oh yeah.
But the only ones that were lifelike had their eyes closed. And I think that's what throws me off. The eyes on the two mannequins in the blood in the helicopter scene were open because they had to be to squirt blood out through their orifices. And the eyes just looked dead and wrong and yeah, weird. And they didn't look proper. But other than that one glaring flaw, this entire movie could easily have been made today. You know, it doesn't look cheeseball at all. It is scary. It's frightening. It's exciting. And I love it. Excellent movie. So what are we going to be reviewing next time, Jethel?
Next time, we are going to be reviewing the 1980 horror movie, one of my all-time favorites. Mm-hmm. George C. Scott stars in The Changeling.
This is a good one, folks. Order it on Amazon. It's like $5. Order it. And by the time you've gotten it and watched it, we will be ready to record. You'll definitely want to see this before you listen to our next podcast. Well, the credits are rolling and the lights are up. Guess it's time to shuffle our way back out into the parking lot.
Another night at the movies, another tub of popcorn.
Popcorn's your treat next time, Devin.
It's always my treat. When was the last time you paid for
the popcorn? I bought the popcorn loads of times.
When was the last time you paid for it?
The one with the monster.
There's always a monster.